Good morning, folks. Welcome to the Solar Fit Renewable Energy Show. This is Bill Gallagher with you again in another beautiful day in the Sunshine State. Thank goodness for the sunshine. We've got our good friend, Mr. Jack Kerfoot, with us, author of Fueling America, An Insider's Journey. And it's been about a year and a half since we got together. Jack, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Bill. It's a pleasure to be on your show again.
Oh, it's awesome. Hey, before we started, we had a little bit of a geographical questioning here, and Jack is over in the great state of Oregon, right?
That's correct. That's on the west coast out here.
And it's early in the morning for you out there, so thanks so much for jumping up and getting on the radio with us. So you're getting ready to go for a bike ride or go to the gym, I understand.
That's right. That's later in the schedule after we finish up here. That's correct.
I love it. I get up early, too. I love it. It's the best time of the day is in the morning before things get really busy, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. The air is clean and crisp, and it's a good way to start the day.
Yeah, and that's so beautiful country out there. Portland, all that area, Seattle, the whole West Coast, Pacific Northwest, I guess what you guys call it out there. It's just awesome.
Yeah, it is. Beautiful scenery out here. It's because we get we don't get heavy rains, but we get sort of a constant drizzle from about October through about February, so everything out here is green. It's no real drought periods out here like they have in California. So it's quite beautiful out here.
Well, good. Well, Jack, we like to start the program with a little bit of background about the folks on here. Talk a little bit about where you were born originally and how you ended up where you are.
All right. Well, originally I was born in Oklahoma, and then after high school I served with the 101st Airborne Division in Vietnam, and then I came back to university and started at the University of Oklahoma in the science program, and graduated with a degree in geophysics in 1976, about the time America was having another type of energy crisis. That was 1973, the oil embargo, and cars would be lined up for blocks just to be able to buy 4 or 5 gallons of gasoline. Gasoline prices were escalating and impacting our economy, so I decided to join the oil and gas industry as a way to help our country and to find more reserves and to address the energy crisis we had at that time. That took me around the world. I've spent 40 years in the energy industry, different forms of the energy industry, but 20 of those years were overseas in places like Malaysia, Indonesia, Australia, Oman, Turkey, Netherlands, England, and Canada. So in 2005, 2006, I had the opportunity to have dinner with the late T. Boone Pickens, who was a well-known oil executive. But T. Boone was telling me why he was starting his change from the oil industry and going into wind, and that was it started off with not only just about the economic advantages of renewable, and I could certainly understand the clean air advantages, but then he started talking about climate change. And so that really started my transformation into the move into being an outspoken advocate for renewable energy as I gained more insight and more understanding. So in 2017, I wrote my book, Fueling America. It tells my story, traveling around the world, dealing with a wide range of scientists and bureaucrats and ministers and wildcatters and sheiks and tycoons. But every few years in the moves that I had, I explained what's going on in the global energy industry, why the demand for coal first started to increase and why it started to decline, why the volatility in the prices for oil and gas, what were the driving forces behind that, and then also the move into renewable energy. First, the major push starting around 2015, 2016, into wind, and then starting with solar a year or two later. And that's where we are today, where solar and renewables are increasing dramatically in use across the entire United States, and coal is on a dramatic decline.
Wow, boy, what a background. You know, you really hit the nail on the head. You think back even 10 or 11 years ago, our renewables maybe made up 1% of the national energy grid. Now, where are we now? We're way up there, aren't we?
Well, there was an exciting event that happened in April of this year. In 2005, that was sort of a landmark because we passed a bipartisan bill called the 2005 Energy Act that gave incentives for a wide range of energies, for nuclear, for oil and gas, and for renewables. And at the time, oil was $60 a barrel, projected to go 10% of their power. And I think if we look across the U.S., the average was around 5 or 6%. That was predominantly hydro for renewable energies at that time. The very small percentage, like you say, 1% or even less, of other forms of renewable energy. But in April of this year, we actually had renewables pass coal. Renewables hit 23%, and coal hit 22%. The DOE, Department of Energy, statistics project that coal will continue to decline while renewable energy will continue to accelerate at very rapid rates. And primarily the reason for that is cost. Coal now is almost triple the cost of wind and solar, hydro, and natural gas. And, of course, the emission of greenhouse gases from coal is about significantly higher than even natural gas.
Well, can we talk a little bit about climate change? Boy, it just seems to be such a polarizing topic. I'm not 100% sure why that is occurring. You know, living here in Florida, we can absolutely see the results of what's going on now. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, the first thing you have to realize is the first reason that some people are skeptical, well, there's many reasons. First of all, many of us, as we get older, find change difficult. And people have grown up in a period of time when fossil fuel was the powered their cars with fossil fuel, the lights in the house were fossil fuel, and now we're talking about change. And now we're saying, well, fossil fuels may have a negative impact. We have to realize that many years ago, when I was in elementary school, in science class, we would play with mercury. Today we know better. And I would say the same thing has started to happen with our understanding of the climate. And really, all it's coming down to saying is the climates have changed since the very beginning of time through geologic history, but over the last 150 years since the Industrial Revolution, what we've seen is maybe a 40 to 50% increase in CO2 concentrations in our atmosphere. And those greenhouse gases effectively allow light to pass in or radiate heat from the sun to pass in, but basically retains the CO2, the greenhouse gases. The carbon dioxide, water vapor, and several other, like fluorocarbons, are all part of greenhouse gases. But 80%, over 80% of the greenhouse gases typically are CO2, carbon dioxide, which comes from the burning of fossil fuels, coal, oil, and natural gas, whether in a car, when we turn on our ignition of our automobile, or whether we turn on, or the power plant that turns on, uses coal or natural gas to generate power. So, I think sometimes people want to make it polarizing because we're coming up to an election year and they want to jump on board and say, well, this party is for renewables and this party isn't. Well, the actual fact is the move to renewable energy across the United States crosses party lines. If you look in the Great Plains states over the last 15 years, they've had far more progress in moving toward renewable energy than, let's say, the West Coast. Because quite candidly, they've been very aggressive in the development of wind farms and solar projects, as well as the new hybrids, which are a combination of wind and solar. So you've seen states like Oklahoma in 2005 maybe have 2 or 3% renewables at the time, which were predominantly hydro, and now they're 40, 45% of their power is from renewables. So from that standpoint, when I meet a climate skeptic, I don't try and argue with him because, again, we're talking about science, we're talking about models, and we're talking about predicting things in the future. I just simply like to ask him the question, do you like to save money? Because the cheapest form of power right now is wind, onshore wind, solar, and hydro. And as long as we recognize the economic advantages and we make the moves in a systematic manner, we can keep the consumer's prices down for power and, more importantly, have clean, green energy. And equally important, we can be energy sufficient, independent, and not rely on any countries overseas for our supplies of power.
What a great explanation! You simplified it in just a few words, but yeah, the political it does go across party lines. You know, whether you're an environmental person or whether you're fiscally responsible, there's something for everyone here. You know, it wasn't that many years ago
absolutely. I think that's the thing that we really have to do is we've got to stop this polarizing, hate-filled rhetoric on both sides and simply say, let's look at the broad way to build a consensus, and there are many reasons to make the move to renewable. I've been particularly impressed with the changing that's going on in solar, since this is a station that spends a lot of time on solar. I mean, we've gone initially with federal rebates and states in the Northeast moving to solar because they had higher cost per power. You know, they might have the electricity cost 2 or 2.5 times as much as you have in Florida. And so they were initially where a large part of the solar went, but now we're starting to see in states like dramatic growth in states like, of course, Florida, and the Carolinas and Texas and Nevada, dramatic growth in solar panels. Now, part of that has to do, I think, with the utilities in those states allowing metering in there, because the states are usually not giving that much additional tax credits or incentives to move to solar. And the states also have lower power costs than, let's say, the Northeast. So with the metering aspect, where they can sell back some of their power to the utility, and also the flexibility to keep their heating costs down, especially in states like Florida, where you may have high costs in the summer from air conditioning, then all of a sudden you're starting to see dramatic growth in the U.S. And everything that I read says the growth in solar will continue based on the information we currently have.
Well, absolutely. And when you're talking about Florida, I mean, we were not that many years ago, we were 13th as far as the adoption rate in across the United States. And now I believe we're up to number 3, which is amazing. More and more people are seeing it in the utility side. It wasn't that many years ago that the utilities were saying that, gee, you know, solar just really isn't going to work. There's not enough sun. It's really kind of crazy. And now, where I often bike over in an area about 30 miles from here, they're putting up 300,000 solar panels for the utility company. I think that's great. I mean, every clean kilowatt is a good kilowatt, and the utilities are spearheading it. But now more and more people are installing it on their homes so they can save money immediately. It's really cool.
Yeah, it is. It absolutely is. And you'll probably notice the difference in the air quality, particularly at different periods of time. As you cycle around, as we generate less CO2 emissions, you'll notice the air quality. Sadly, although Oregon had historically quite a bit of renewable energy, in 2005 we were probably 45%, and that was hydro built in the 1950s and 60s and even the 70s. So they had that legacy of hydro up here. But they've been a little slower to move, so now we're about 60-65% consistently with renewables. And the state, quite candidly, with the resources we have, could easily be well over 100% renewable energy. So states are moving at different paces with different reasons. Now, on the East Coast, what's fascinating is there's a huge building boom right now in the offshore for offshore wind farms from Maine all the way down to North Carolina. Europe has been using offshore wind farms now for well over 20 years. The winds consistently blow stronger offshore than they do onshore, and that's based on the wind current systems and the temperatures that we have, so climatic reasons. But generally, that's a fact that you find the winds offshore stronger and more consistent than they are onshore. But the speed is important because a difference in wind speed, let's say 14 miles an hour and 16 miles an hour, is a difference in power output capacity of over 50%. And now the wind turbines they have now are much larger power generation sources. They're anywhere from 10 to 12, and they're projected to be even higher in the upcoming years for each wind turbine. And so now what we're talking about in the offshore area is these wind projects will be able to have megawatt capacity on the par of the larger nuclear power plants, let's say 2,500 to 3,500 megawatts, without any of the risks that we have associated with nuclear. And the costs are continuing to plunge on offshore wind, and I think it is still not as cheap as onshore wind. But because they are offshore, what we are seeing is there's more potential for major power source and major power supply. So as the older power plants, whether it's coal or natural gas or nuclear, are phased out, and typically they have a 40-year life cycle, the Northeast is looking at bring on the onshore wind as a way to replace those power plants. So we're seeing another change in the East Coast. And I hopefully the West Coast will start to wake up to the potential for offshore wind, and we can start to make that move.
Yeah, it's really exciting. We're in an exciting period of time. And, you know, folks are going to take a short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Mr. Jack Kerfoot.
Solar fit your life and set yourself free with the sun's free energy. Solar fits the way, we can show you how. Solar fit your life, the future is now. America needs free energy. Solar fit sets you free.
Hi folks, this is Bill Gallagher. Join your friends and neighbors. Solar fit your home and watch your power meter spin backwards.
Solar fit your life and set yourself free with the sun's free energy.
Hi, folks. Welcome back to the Solar Fit Renewable Energy Show. Bill Gallagher here with my friend Jack Kerfoot, author of Fueling America, An Insider's Journey. And I'll tell you what, Jack, when you say insider's journey, you're not kidding. You have done so many things. And hats off and thanks for your service with the 101st Airborne Division. That is awesome. Thank you so much.
Well, Bill, thank you very much. Unfortunately, we didn't hear much of that when we came back and from Vietnam in those days, but the world has changed, and I think for the better, even though we may have quite a few debates over a lot of things, especially in political years. I'm really pleased to hear people say thank you for your service to the veterans that are coming back, because we owe them so much to help keep our freedoms that it's easy to take for granted, but having spent so many years overseas, in my opinion, this is the best country in the world, and I thank our servicemen every day for their service to keep our country free.
Amen. I couldn't agree with you more, Jack. Thank you so much for what you've done and for all of our veterans out there. That's what allows us to enjoy the quality of life that we have. Hey, Jack, before, you know, and during the last segment, you really got me thinking about something about resistance to change. Boy, you really hit it, the nail on the head. You think back in the early part of the century where we were running our lights with kerosene oil and the resistance to the adoption of just electricity that we're so used to using now. It was incredible, the fight that went on between Tesla and Edison. All was unbelievable, all that stuff.
Yeah, well, absolutely. You know, what people fail to realize is we've had a steady change of or evolution in our power supply from the early days of our country. You know, in the late 1700s, the major source of power really was wood and timber. So we started harvesting the trees, and then people found about the advantages of whale oil, and so they started harvesting the whales. And to be honest, if it wasn't for Rockefeller coming up with an inexpensive form of heating fuel, kerosene, we would have probably completely devastated and probably caused the extinction of most, if not all, whale populations around the world. And Rockefeller's development of kerosene was significantly cheaper than whale oil, and also it was a better heating source. So then we started to move into oil, into a major source as well. And, of course, coal grew because we have tremendous coal reserves in this country. And so that's changed over a period of time. And around 1950, the use of oil passed coal as far as fossil or as a power source or power supply. And that was because of the automobile. And so now we're starting to see another change as we see coal go into decline because of costs. And we also start to see the cost of renewables fall, which is now driving the change from fossil fuels to renewables. It's also, there's another change that's starting, and we're going to start to notice it, I think, perhaps in 2020. And certainly, I think we're going to see even more changes over the next 5 to 6 or 7 years. And that's in the transportation sector. You know, there are new batteries coming out. You know, if we talk about electric vehicles right now, the Tesla gets about 320, 340 miles on a single charge, and the Chevy Bolt gets about 240, and these are EPA numbers. But I have friends of mine that have a Bolt, and they're getting over 300 miles on their vehicle. But what we're finding now is there are new batteries, not just lithium, but a wide range of new batteries that are now being able to drive up to 500 miles on a single charge. But more importantly, they can recharge these batteries in less than 10 minutes. In fact, some are claiming they can get a full recharge in 3 or 4 minutes. So now we're actually talking about not changing the way that we get our car refueled. We can literally drive into a fueling station if they have a charging station, and in 3 or 4 minutes get a full recharge and drive another 500 miles. And you're seeing in Europe what they have right now. Of course, they have a much denser populated continent. But they have what they call fueling stations that do sell gasoline or diesel, but they also have charging stations. So I think this year you'll find that I believe Ford will be coming out with an electric F-150 pickup, and also their iconic brand of Mustang will come out in an electric version this year. Amazon has just committed to purchase 100,000 electric trucks from a American company up in Detroit called Rivian, and they're sort of leading the development of trucks and SUVs for electric vehicles, not only in the United States but around the world in their technology. So they've had joint ventures with other companies, including Ford and General Motors and Apple and Google, in development of different types of electric vehicle transportation. So I think we're going to see by 2025, certainly by 2030, I expect more people will be buying electric vehicles than they will be combustion engine vehicles.
That was really good. I got to tell you something funny. My brother and I have kind of a friendly argument about this because we're both gearheads and we both love the smell of nitromethane in the morning, right? The racing, right? But I keep talking to my brother about these electric cars are coming. They're awesome, man. You got 0 to 60 in like 2 seconds. You got it. And he goes, "Oh no, it'll never happen." So it's happening, and I keep encouraging him to go on down and try out one of these things, because the acceleration and all the electronics in these, it is amazing. It's actually a computer with wheels that you get the chance to drive around in.
Yeah, you see, and then what people fail to realize is the electric vehicles, I believe they have only 18 moving parts. So their maintenance is minimal. I mean, basically the maintenance, like you say, is the computer, just to make sure there are system updates, just like your cell phone or your computer. And, of course, their operating costs are significantly less because you're not changing out the oil. And the only thing you change out are the windshield wipers and the tires when it's time to do that. So the overall operating costs are significantly less. And even in states with high electric costs, you know, like California or, let's say, New England area or even Hawaii, which has the highest power cost, they're still significantly cheaper than buying gasoline. And we've got to realize that fossil fuels, oil and natural gas and coal, are not a renewable resource. There's only a finite amount of these resources left. The highest quality coal, anthracite, has been virtually mined out across not just the United States but around the world, which means that to generate power from coal, you now have to be using lower quality coal, so it takes more coal, and that also means the transportation costs are higher. So right now, even though the cheapest form of coal, which is running around $2.50, $3 a ton, of course it takes more tonnage of that to ship, but the shipping costs on rail are about $10 to $12 a ton. So right now, that's why the costs for coal have basically skyrocketed in the U.S., because the higher quality coal has been mined out. And but what remaining higher quality coal exists is used for very specific, what I call metallurgical operations that can justify a higher cost from that standpoint. But for the day-to-day, keep our power running in our homes, the lower quality coal is just, quite candidly, almost three times as much as onshore wind or solar from that standpoint.
Well, what we're seeing here, which is really, really exciting, and we hear about it from our customers nearly every day, is we're installing not only solar power on their home, but Tesla power walls to store that energy, and they have electric cars, so they come home at night. They don't have any cost to run the car. They charge the car from the
solar. Well, I think it's also important to understand, sometimes I hear people say it's impractical to make the move, but the Department of Energy just issued a report. And they said with just current technology, which assumes no new technology is going forward, that by 2050, 80% of the U.S. power grid could be from renewable energy. And the reason they pick 30-year period, what they typically do, the DOE does, does is they look at the existing power plants that they have. And nuclear power plants, for instance, are licensed for a 40-year period of time. And in some cases, they can be licensed for another period of time. But no nuclear plant, power plant that I've ever read about has ever been licensed for more than 60 years. Atomic Energy Commission is very hesitant to do that because of new technology that needs to be brought in. And the same thing with coal or natural gas is typically a 40-year time frame. So the DOE typically looks at each of the power plants across the U.S., and then they sort of stage when they think these plants will be coming out when they make their projections. And then they make the assumption that the state utility boards will be looking to do what they always do, look for a reliable source of power that is as inexpensive as possible. And for that reason, they're making the assumption that by 2050, just 30 years from now, we will 80% of the entire United States power grid will be on some form of renewable energy.
Well, that's exciting stuff. And if you look around the country, it's really interesting. Now, you mentioned hydro. Florida, the highest elevation is like 6 feet. So we're not going to have any hydro down here, but we have an abundance of sunshine. And you go up into Niagara Falls or all these other areas where you have hydro, that is a great source of power. And when you go out west, the wind, I mean, we live not only in the best country in the world, but with the most attributes to be able to take advantage of renewable energy.
Actually, we do, and there's more technology developing. I mean, one thing that we still have not done a significant amount of development that we still is undeveloped source is geothermal. When I was in university, I worked one summer at a geothermal plant in Northern California near a town called Cloverdale, north of Santa Rosa. And at that time, this was in the 70s. They were generating 80% of the electrical power for the entire Bay Area. Now, that plant is still operating today, and basically what they do is they drill down into the igneous rock, into fractures, and what comes out is steam, and so the steam then comes out the wellhead and then goes into a pipeline and turns the turbines, and then they go back and re-inject the water. So they're using the Earth's heat to turn into steam and to generate power plants in Northern California. And there are more areas like that across the United States. The other area that's been technology that's been developed and worked on for decades, but now is starting to really show, I think, promise, is wave energy, mechanical wave and tidal energy. There's actually a group out here in Oregon, in Portland, called Vigor Industries, and they've just developed a 800-ton buoy that you deploy, and from that the tidal energy comes in, and they're able to generate power from this buoy. It's currently being piloted or tested in Hawaii. It's a major source of interest for the U.S. Navy. Obviously, with the climate change that we're seeing and potential increases in the sea level, the Navy is looking at a lot of what the climate change will have on their day-to-day operations, but also ask the question, how do we move from fossil fuels, which may be in limited supply, to something that's renewable and we can be energy independent? So when you bring in something like tidal or wave energy, then all of a sudden that I think we could actually hit that 100% target, as well with other new developments in technology, whether it be in solar or wind. But there are other ideas out there. And there's also hydrogen as well, which may be another source of renewable power.
Jack, we're almost out of time here. Now, I've got a copy of your book, and I think everyone listening in today should. How can they get a copy of your book?
Well, it is available on Amazon.com. And also I have a website at www.jackkerfoot, JACKKERFOOT.com. And I have a link on that website to Amazon, and you can buy the book in either paperback or in Kindle format. And it's also available in other bookstores, where Books A Million or the other stores that you can go online and do shopping that way.
Well, I highly recommend this, Jack, and I think, you know, you're probably looking at writing a sequel to it because things are changing so much. Is that down the pipeline here?
Well, no, actually not. I've been a little disappointed at the speed that my city's been making the move to renewable energy. So I'm doing something that my friends are thinking is absolutely insane. I'm running for political office because one of the issues are we need to do a better job of moving to renewable energy and protecting our environment. So I'm running for Portland commissioner in the May 2020 primary.
Wow.
And renewable energy is one of my platforms of my campaign. So
awesome.
Don't have too much time for a sequel to that book, but I will be doing other radio interviews and discussions in the upcoming years.
Well, we'll have you back on soon, Jack. We're almost out of time. Good luck in your run, and folks out there in Portland, make sure you vote for Jack. Jack, thank you so much. Have a wonderful weekend and a wonderful Christmas, okay?
You too, Bill. Have a wonderful Christmas, okay. And thank you so much.
Thank you. Folks, that's the end of our series for today, but Jack is a consummate expert. Please go online, buy his book. You'll love it. Have a good weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
SolarFit Renewable Energy Radio Show, paid for by SolarFit.